And stay at this station, 96.3 FM, free radio. It's Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides, Sunday Shenanigans time. Stay with us for the first show in July, July 1st, 2001. In case you haven't checked your calendar, it's Civil Rights time. Stay with us.
It's June 21st, and it's about goodness knows what time, probably around 2:30, 3. And we're here at Hippie Planter in front of the vacant Juice World store in New Leaf, talking to, we'll call him Captain Morgan. Captain Morgan, you're a habitué of the farmer's market, right?
Oh, I love farmer's market.
Every Wednesday or so, you know, you show up there, and you were there, I guess, yesterday and a week ago, right?
I was not there yesterday because of what happened a week ago.
Well, tell me what happened a week ago.
They were giving tickets to people for loitering inside the market, standing around after they had bought their stuff, hanging out, talking. And they were just going haywire and like doing all kinds of things. And even, and 45 minutes yesterday, I left before Farmer's Market started yesterday. But 45 minutes before, there was a sergeant sitting across the street just riding on his clipboard and riding on his clipboard and riding on his
you
clipboard.
Mean the chunky, amiable Sergeant Butchie Baker over you?
Well, I'm not even sure.
Right. Mustache, more paunch than I, though not much more, perhaps.
Well, I don't know.
All the tips and
so, you actually saw somebody get a ticket for loitering, and you said you were describing these people as people who were sitting around with their bags of groceries?
They weren't even sitting around, they were just standing around.
And you saw police officers come and give people tickets for loitering?
I didn't see it. I was told about it, actually.
You were told about it. Yeah. Okay. Well, perhaps Alibaba was annoyed and filed a distant complaint. Ah, no, just kidding. Actually, we're here at Alibaba's. We've gone notorious in the last month or so for... He filed a complaint for a man dropping breadcrumbs on the sidewalk or shaking them from his beard or some such thing. It was Jerry Henry who got the ticket. any other comments on the farmer's market? Anything happening else here today that we should know about? And how's the baby coming?
Good.
And when is it coming?
August 1st.
All right, and what's the name of the baby?
I don't have a clue.
That's an interesting name.
Sarita.
Sounds like the city council. Scott Graham! Another activist I see across the street who may or may not choose to come, apparently going the other way. Well, thank you. And where's my hug?
I don't know, I should ask you, where's my hug?
You should. Lee, any comments on the farmer's market situation?
I'm just waiting for the no trespassing signs to appear on the church lawn. That would be truly ugly.
Thank you. Hey, Mary, were you at the farmer's market yesterday noticing anything particular about how people were being treated? And was it okay? What was happening? Talking to the infamous Mary Curry.
Cigarette.
Mary, you've been struggling to get housing for, what is it, a year and a half now since we first met?
Well, a little over a year.
I see you on your bicycle with all various bags and cups attached. And your inimitable sun hat. How old are you now? Tell us the truth.
Oh.
What is your age?
Do you have to know?
The world must know.
Yeah, they must know now.
Let's put it this way. She's in her 70s, folks.
Right.
And she doesn't have a place to live, but presumably you have the money to get one if there were housing available for you, right?
Well, I do have, I'm under housing now. You know, Section 8, but most places won't take it. So, what's the point?
So you continue checking on the tender mercies of the Interface Satellite shithole program, I mean shelter program, right?
Right.
Actually, it's not that it's a bad program in terms of what it does as far as giving you a place on the floor of a church.
With a thin mattress.
With a thin mattress. For how many people is that?
About 18.
Actually, I think it's more, but it's certainly not much more than 30.
And when the church is small, they have more people.
It's talking to
Dana
of the
Sushi Now.
And you are a woman working in a kiosk, and as such, you've got a pretty good vantage point on what some call hippie planter here at Lincoln and Pacific.
Yes.
And you've seen some sights and heard some sounds you wish to share with us?
Yeah, the other day there was this, a couple of girls sitting down here that weren't customers, and a couple other guys that weren't customers. The girls were like the hippie crowd, and the guys, I don't know what they were, but we're not supposed to smoke around here. And both of the girls were smoking cigarettes, and so the guys got on her case and started telling her to stop, but like very rudely,
uh-huh.
And got in her face and started yelling at her. And
neither of these were customers?
No one was a customer. That was the funny part.
This is shocking, man. I'm going to call the city council right now. Go ahead.
So, what was I saying? Oh yeah, he got in her face as if he was going to like start to beat her up, and so she was cussing back at him, and so I don't know, it was kind of freaky, but I went out there and like told her to put out her cigarette and...
Okay, I want you to go in, fair fight. Come out fighting, one fist up. All ready? Go ahead now. Don't come out till the bell rings. The bell's not going to ring, so get moving. You tried to separate the contestants.
Yeah, and I asked him to put out the cigarette because it was...
non-smoking.
Yeah, but like, he was way too weird about it. But so his friend pulled him away, and as he was walking away, he like pulled on his pants and showed off his... ass.
How would you describe his ass? Was there an interesting tattoo?
The guy?
Yeah.
Oh. He was just wearing a white shirt and shorts.
So in other words, for future mooners, let's try to add a little more character to the whole situation. Possibly some color stuff. But anything else?
That's the main interesting thing. I can't think of anything else.
No further complaints from the infamous Alibaba?
No.
How about tickets from police?
Not for me.
And you haven't seen much in the way of harassment by hosts or other authorities?
They're just always telling people to move their luggage. But that's all that I've noticed lately.
Thank you.
Sure.
So it's somewhere between 2 and 2:30 on June 23rd, Saturday 2001. We're approaching. Here's Paul. Did I miss the festivities, Paul?
Sheldon, Becky, Sheldon.
Oh, cool. So, Paul, what do you make of all this?
Exhorting the crowd.
You were exhorting. You're an attorney, aren't you, Paul?
Yes, Robert.
What is an attorney doing in a illegal campground?
And you've been listening to various tapes. We're interrupting this latest tape, which is, of course, a discussion with attorney Paul Sanford, who represents a number of the Camp Paradise residents, the campsite along the San Lorenzo River, in the media lately, which is, of course, as every campsite in the Santa Cruz City area is illegal, in spite of the fact that the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people have to survive illegally every night because of City Council's Thou Shalt Not Be Homeless law, a $54 fine for even sleeping, even if you haven't got a tent up, for even wrapping up with a blanket under the blanket ban, Municipal Code 6.36010B. There was a barbecue about a week ago at the Camp Paradise, and we're about to hear some of the discussion, speeches, and so forth. Paul Sanford is an attorney who I have kind of run into at City Council. He's expressed some sympathy for some of my concerns around the homeless and put himself forward to engage in negotiations with the City Council in order to in order to help the people at Camp Paradise not be spirited away by police on July 1st, as was threatened in various tickets and notices left at the camp several weeks ago. Although if you talk to Deputy Chief Locke, apparently, as Dave Beck of the San Jose Mercury News has, you'll get different stories. Locke reportedly said, according to Beck in the Mercury News, that they can come anytime they want, before the 1st, after the 1st, whenever, because they are the police and they have the camping ban law. And of course, Locke is correct. Because of the City Council's failure to address an issue which has repeatedly been placed before them, but they've refused to put on the agenda, to wit, the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance and the broader camping ordinance itself, which is a complete camping ban. There are some minor exceptions. You can camp 3 days a year with the permission of Parks and Rec, and if it's a city event and things of that sort. But for most people, for almost everybody every night, and certainly for the Camp Paradise residents who have been maintaining a clean and sober, neat and tidy campground, it is illegal for them to be there at night, as well as illegal for every other homeless person, as I said. People in their vehicles are not exempted from this draconian sweep of the law, this fear that people have that their vehicle is going to be seized, they're going to be ticketed, that they can't use police services because if they do, they may have a warrant out for themselves, or they may be recognized as being in an illegal status through simply doing what each of us must do every night, sleep. And this, of course, has been brought up endlessly by David Silva with two initiatives, I guess three now, to put the matter on the ballot. And City Council members have made hay while they were running on this issue. They've agreed to end the sleeping ban. But then Ed Porter, Christopher Crone, Tim Fitzmaurice, Keith Sugar, Emily Riley, all disappear into the Rotkin foliage, the Kennedy foliage, the foliage which essentially says, we can't do anything, we haven't got enough, quote, political capital, or we haven't got the votes, even though there are five of them, and I'm sure if it appeared on the agenda, they would have to do something. But Fitzmaurice, our Green Party mayor, is conveniently making sure that none of that happens, even though the Green Party platform clearly states that sleeping bans are something the Green Party categorically rejects. Unfortunately, our Green Party, our local Santa Cruz Fitzmaurice-led Green Party, doesn't reject that. At least they are refusing to take a public stand and come forward and say to the Mayor Fitzmaurice in any public way, Tim, get off the pot. You cannot maintain your status as a Green Party person. You cannot maintain any credibility here unless you follow the Green Party platform or give us an understanding as to what the problem is. Now, we've talked about this. But anyway, Camp Paradise is what you've been listening to, and you're going to hear more of that. And we also should be getting a call shortly from activist Just Man Jim Costner, who's running a series of Tuesday night educational forums. Last night he had Sarah Jane Olson, the woman from the 60s and 70s who was seized by the FBI a few years ago as a middle-class housewife now living on the East Coast and dragged back to Los Angeles on an alleged bombing effort that never went off in the early 70s or late 60s, and they've been running her through court for a year and a half, 2 years now, not to mention her attorneys. And she was actually up here at one of Jim's forums last week. And Jim is holding this series of forums on political prisoners, on issues that are both local and state and national, international, in fact. Everyone's invited. You don't have to pay if you can't afford it, though he encourages you to donate something. Happens every Tuesday night at the Vets Hall, which puts it in conflict, as it happens at 7 o'clock in the evening, with the evening session of City Council. But you can always go to City Council, speak at Oral Communications, which happens early in the session, and then leave and check out the speakers at the Costner. It's not just the Costner Forum. The Forum actually has other people, too. As a matter of fact, Jim doesn't really speak there. He has gotten other people to speak. And I'll be speaking, most important of all, of course, on Tuesday. It's going to be about July 4th and what the meaning of July 4th is and what real independence might constitute. And I'm going to be trying to draw in some civil rights for poor people issues, as I'm sure other speakers will too. So people are invited, and Jim should be calling in shortly to talk about that. We're going to listen to a bit of this interview with Paul Sanford, who has taken, as I said, on the Camp Paradise residents as his clients, and has actually continued, I think, to draw some interesting media focus on the matter, though I don't know. I think that now they're probably going through they want low exposure now, because from what I hear, sort of second and third hand, and people have to talk to the Camp Paradise campers themselves and or Paul Sanford and or the city council to get any clear information on this. It looks like they may have negotiated a hiatus on the police, because it is July 1st. There's nobody at the camp in terms of police, and they seem to be quite confident that the police aren't going to be coming for a while. And I think Paul Sanford is looking to get somebody else who has already offered the money to find a piece of property to which these people can relocate and live on, now that and maybe do the kind of wilderness cleanup that they've done at the this property right next to the Highway 1 bridge. Right, if you want to go down there and check it out, it is right next to, you go down the Denny's Felker Street Road to the river, and then you turn right and go up river very under the bridge a little bit along the river, and you'll find Camp Paradise, and the people there are very friendly. I don't know how interested they are now in lots of publicity. I think they're probably interested in less publicity. Indeed, they were told by city council members that one of their problems was too much publicity. I don't think they should be listening to the city council members, but that's my opinion. I've always found them to be, city council members, that is, generally a treacherous lot, unless you get them, you know, confronted with a lot of people with a strong opinion, or an election coming right up, or a possible initiative, or people packing their chambers, or some strong insiders with a lot of money and a lot of pull, then it's a little different. But otherwise, on controversial issues, city council members have shown a remarkable lack of spine, ranging from rent control to community control of police to the Tidelands issue to real affordable housing in the beach flats that doesn't destroy existing affordable housing. I mean, you name it. This city council has been horrible on one issue after another, and they won't engage in rational dialogue. That's the main problem. They will cut you off. They will arrest you. They will evict you from the council chambers. And you'll get that kind of treatment instead of the kind of consideration that I think people in the community raising arguments should get. Dialogue. Real dialogue, real answers. Just doesn't happen with this city council. And it hasn't happened with previous city councils either. I mean, it is an institutional problem in our government here. I should say in their government, because it's certainly a misnomer to call it our government. We don't have any meaningful input into it, nor do we have any meaningful way of even using it to get issues passed, unless you spend a lot of time and money to do it. And even then, you may find that the people who made promises in November have forgotten them by January, as happened with the sleeping ban. Anyway, let's hear a little bit more of the events of last week ago Saturday. There was a big barbecue that Camp Paradise held, where folks were invited to come and give public support. And as I said, that now seems to be operating in a different way. It seems like the folks at Camp Paradise are saying, you know, we've got this whole thing resolved. We trust our attorney. We trust the city council. And we believe that that there is some sort of agreement that has been made, although apparently there are no copies of this agreement that are visible anywhere. So it's not clear really what's going on, except that I would encourage people who are advocates of Camp Paradise to remain vigilant. I don't want to seem like an old paranoid Cassandra, but I don't trust the police here locally. I don't trust the city council. I think that though some of them may have good intentions, and in a sense they all think they have good intentions, I'm sure various leaders of different countries who end up being dictators and so forth think they have good intentions too. Everybody hopes that, you know, we all in the privacy of our own lives, our own rooms, looking at ourselves in the mirror frequently, I mean usually, think we have good intentions. And the question is, what is really being guaranteed? I mean, I don't know if anything could be guaranteed unless it's a public document, for example, and I don't think there's any public documents out there. So I don't know what to say about the situation, except that I really encourage both the Camp Paradise folks and those who are supporting them to stay in touch with each other. I think people should consider being supportive of Camp Paradise 2, Camp Paradise 3, Camp Paradise 4, because Camp Paradise, which has between 30 and 40 people now, I believe, can only serve, less than 1% or thereabouts, maybe 1% or 2% of the homeless population in Santa Cruz. And there are plenty of other people living elsewhere who are suffering. You haven't heard about it in the papers, but Scott Graham reported to me that there was a stabbing across the river from Camp Paradise in the drug zone, so to speak, where a lot of heroin and other drug dealing happens. Not in Camp Paradise. Camp Paradise has cleared all that out, as far as I'm led to believe. And what happened in that zone was the victim, who was apparently reportedly a drug dealer, which doesn't justify any kinds of stabbing anyway. Thank you, Mr. Pharmacist, Mr. Doctor. If you're a legal drug dealer or a big-time drug pusher, you got all kinds of class privileges. But if you're, one of the people who sells to poor people out in the bushes, then you're, the biggest criminal in the world. I'm sorry, it doesn't really ring true with me. I regard the tobacco merchants as being the major killers in our society, the alcohol merchants being, they are the major killers. There's no question about it. But, of course, the excuse for shredding the Constitution are the heroin and the cocaine and the marijuana and the LSD dealers. Thank you very much. Not that I'm recommending use of any particular drug or herb or medication. That's always up to the individual and should be. Unfortunately, not. It isn't anymore in 2001. Anyway, the guy was stabbed. He was airlifted to Palo Alto, according to activist Scott Graham. And, of course, that hasn't found its way into the papers. At least I didn't see it this morning. There was, of course, this big shooting downtown that made it into the papers, and various people are telling me, why did they riddle this guy's car with bullets? Why did they shoot him so many times? And I don't know. I know that, I have a tendency to believe that there is no meaningful control over the police department. Belcher doesn't exercise it. The grand jury doesn't exercise it. The IA, the Internal Affairs Department of the police department, doesn't exercise it. The state attorney general doesn't exercise it. The FBI doesn't show up and do investigations. And certainly, and this is the saddest thing, the community doesn't exercise it. And, of course, the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or Review Board, as they like to call themselves, doesn't exercise it at all. And they simply make it easier for the police department to sort of grease its own wheels and roll forward, all the while saying, look, we have a police review board, see? So we're not doing anything wrong. So this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobespierre, Robert Norris. Why Bathrobespierre? Well, Robespierre was the guy in the 18th century who stood up for people. He was also considered to be something of a crazy militant who was behind the Reign of Terror. And so I was jokingly called Robespierre at one point. And then when I wore a bathrobe to sleep-in rallies where we were getting arrested for peacefully sleeping in back in the 80s and through the 90s to be in solidarity with homeless people. I'm not homeless myself, who have to suffer under this crazy law every night. I was called Bathrobespierre. Sounds like a phone call coming in. Let's see who's there.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert Norris. Hello, Free Radio. This is Jim Costner.
Hey, Jim.
How are you today?
Slow start and grumpy, as you probably know.
Yeah, I'm having a little slow start myself. It's a constant process of recovering from the demoralization of the system of chaos.
Indeed. Well, I understand you're moving from place to place, looking for a place to rent. I'm going to be out of my place in 2 weeks, and so it's, hey, it could be we could meet at Camp Paradise 6.
Camp Paradise 2 would have to start before Camp Paradise 6.
That's true. I guess you're going to be maybe talking about that kind of thing on July 4th, maybe, or?
Well, yeah, that's part of why July 4th is being orchestrated and organized, and we're putting together a human rights rally and a march and demonstration in support of human rights for the citizens of Santa Cruz, specifically focused on issues of houselessness and repression of poverty and the Camp Paradise residents and building support for the residents of Camp Paradise for all the work that they've been doing in the community, and basically calling for the community to continuously to support them and to work towards the goals of the abolition of the sleeping and camping and sitting bans and the unconstitutional laws that violate people's rights in this community, and also promoting things like, just the general attacks in terms of the police repression. Like, for example, as the Camp Paradise residents have gotten a little break from police repression for the next couple of weeks, they certainly still could face, an imminent police, problem, to say the least. And the people in the flats are experiencing police repression daily in regards to the drug war and the racist warfare that goes on in this community. And also the farmers market, there's been more and more police presence out there to harass and intimidate, you know, as they're out there with their camcorders, you know, videoing people buying produce. You know, it's amazing the increasement of the police state.
Well, you never can tell what kind of produce these people are buying. I mean, it's produce can lead to all kinds of things. Marijuana use, for instance.
Yeah, tomatoes.
Apples, you start growing tomatoes, and then you might grow marijuana. I mean,
sure, there's a deep relationship there, definitely. Next thing you know, you might be having cocaine plantations, and next thing you know, you might want a drug cartel, and next thing you know, you might be running an empire.
Nate, sounds like not a bad idea. I'm going to have to get some money somehow. Just kidding, actually.
So we wanted to encourage people to come out to the town clock at 12 o'clock in support of these issues and the basic rights. Also, in support of rent control.
On July 4th?
On July 4th at 12 o'clock this Wednesday at the town clock for a rally, a human rights rally, a march, a gathering of the community, and hopefully a lot of community dialogue and discussion. And please bring your leaflets, your newspapers, your drums, your musical instruments, your voices, your bodies, your friends. If you're part of an organization, or not, if an individual, come and make announcements about things that you're doing on and working on and trying to get support for. And just, it's another, you know, it's also the day of independence. You know, I mean, that's if in my mind, that's one of the most hypocritical days in this whole country.
Right.
I mean, the empire is going to promote Independence Day, while Momia, you know, for being a freedom fighter, which is promoting real independence, has been locked down in a cage and incarcerated, you know, for 18 years on death row, and the system's going to talk about independence, you know, and the native people are under 5 centuries of genocide, and the system's going to talk about independence, and middle-class people are going to go to barbecues and go to the boardwalk and go wave flags and have fireworks and all these things, and lower-class people are trying to figure out how to survive and where their next meal is going to come from, and if they're going to be incarcerated, or, you know, if they're going to go to jail for long periods of time, or, you know, or many other horrendous things. So it's a good day to protest. It's a good day to march. It's a good day to take on the system. It's a good day to support the truth, the notion of real independence for all people, not just an elite groups of people, but all people.
Well, I would have to agree with you, Jim. Much as I would love to disagree, we could have a public spat here. But that sounds good. How can people get more information about this? Or, I guess I've been interested in seeing Camp Paradise 2, Camp Paradise 3. Of course, I don't live outdoors, and that certainly is dependent on what folks outdoors want to do. But as I understand it, some folks who are indoors are willing to be supportive of those possible multiple campgrounds that could be springing up now that Camp Paradise seems to have gotten some kind of acknowledgement, even if sort of under the covers and behind the scenes and in the back room from the city council, or at least that's kind of what we're hearing. What should people do, both in houses and out of houses, to think that maybe that the other 95% of the homeless people who have to sleep at night might be able to do something similar?
Well, I think that those are valid, really vital, and very important questions, very significant questions, and that the different aspects of the community have been trying to answer. And my opinion is that essentially for the houseless situation, and we really do need to abolish the sleeping ban, you know, just uncompromisingly. A law against sleep, a law against camping, a law against sitting, a law against, you know, life and survival is unjust and it needs to be abolished. And I think that's one way to help the houseless in a major way. Another way is to promote positive models like Camp Paradise is doing. They have a positive model that's for the most part ecologically, environmentally sound, cooperative, intelligent, caring, human oriented, family oriented. It's a very positive model. It's a healing model. It's a good role model for the houseless population. So I think we need to support those types of models. And I think that the city really needs to, the city needs to fund it, and organizations, independent organizations of the city, need to, houseless and not houseless, work together as human beings to build programs in the community of facilities where there's showers, where there's healing, counseling, therapy, drug addiction programs that are actually effective, medical and dental treatment for people who need, places to sleep, so out of the coldness and the harshness of the winter.
You know, actually that's going to become a major issue, Jim, because Proposition 36 passed last year at the state level, which mandates that first-time drug users, including heroin, cocaine, etc., be sent into drug programs. And as I understand it from, again, activist Scott Graham, the only plans in Santa Cruz to set up any kind of drug clinic is to sort of turn the jail into a pseudo-drug clinic, which actually will simply be a jail.
It'll actually drug the inmates and it'll keep them further away from their health.
Well, it will simply you know, incarcerate them instead of following the letter and the spirit of Proposition 36. Now,
right.
I haven't interviewed Sheriff Tracy or other officials on this. I'm just wondering. I mean, that's a rumor that is floating, and so don't take it as gospel, all you listeners.
I'm sure that will be the manifestation if we allow that to be, because the system has no economic interest in reforming the prison industrial complex, because the prison industrial complex is the largest growth industry of the American capitalist today. So, you know, the only way that's going to change is if the people demand the change, organize, and unite.
Well,
and
of course, the people voted for Proposition 36, and I'm wondering
thinking that it was going to, you know, be true to the spirit of the law, the letter of the law.
Right. And I think that what we need to do is get some of those big grants, although I think the state is hedging on the grants, but get some grants out for, you know, clean and sober campgrounds like Camp Paradise, who are actually, according to the reports of people living there, changing people from alcohol and drug dependent conditions into, you know, productive conditions where they don't have to rely on these things anymore.
Yes, definitely.
Which about is as likely as snow in June or a meaningful legislation from Tim Fitzmaurice.
It's a question of the power of the people. It's a question that the people demand of their city government, the implementation of human rights and the implementation of positive programs and basically the institutions of liberation,
mm-hmm.
the institutions of direct aid and benefit to the community.
Well, you also have a forum, which I mentioned earlier in the show, that's coming on every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the Vets Hall. You want to talk about that at all?
Or? Thank you, yeah. Tuesday night, Robert Norris, your host of Bathrobes, Beards, Broadsides, who's coming at you right this morning.
What a guy.
Will be there on Tuesday night, longtime activist for championing the rights of the repressed in this community. And Steve Argue, a former political prisoner, will also be there. Danny Garcia, who was the brother of Mark Garcia, who was murdered by the SFPD, justly with 7 cans of pepper spray, will also be in the house. Myself, who's looking at 6 years presently for the smashing of Christopher Columbus statue, will be in the house. Also, Evelyn Schoenfeld, who's an 85-year-old wonderful activist in the Santa Cruz community who's been involved for long periods of time and, you know, works towards the freedom of Mumia and political prisoners and against police brutality and for the liberation struggles will also be there. And who else? Carlos Padilla from Students for Justice from San Jose will also be there. Hank Milstein from the Communist Party will be there. A whole lot of organizations, a whole lot of people, and hopefully the community will be there as well. And otherwise we won't have a program. So it's really, this program is for you, for everybody out there. There is time. We make time available in every program on Tuesday night for discussion, for everyone to have expression and freedom of voice and to share their opinions and their programs and their announcements. And if you're part of an organization that you're working on different projects, that's a good place to get support. And we encourage everyone to come out. And it's at 7:30 this Tuesday night. At the Vets Hall, upstairs, room 23. And the theme of this program on Tuesday night, it's July 3rd, so it's the day before so-called Independence Day. And the theme of the program is called The Hypocrisy of Independence Day, U.S. Democracy and Its Myths. And we'll be getting into a lot of issues around those subjects. And as a woman told me yesterday on the phone while I was doing outreach, she told me, well, it sounds like good medicine. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, it really is healing. It's what Mumia says. He says that the most sane thing a human being can do is to resist this, the mightiest of empires. And so that there's a really incredible healing process in the whole notion of resisting the system of injustice.
Well, I thank you, Jim. We've been listening to Jim Costner, activist, interior decorator, who's given the Columbus statue in San Jose a whole new look, and a man who's been fighting the sleeping ban for the last decade. Anything else you want to add, Jim? Are there a number people can call if they want information?
Right now, unfortunately, I'm a little hard to get a hold of. So for the moment, I don't really have a number, but that will change.
Well, I think if people want to reach you, Jim, they can call the Huff line at 423-4833. That's the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you have any questions about anything Jim has said about the Veterans Hall, program that's happening at 7:30 on Tuesday, not at 7, as I said earlier, but at 7:30, or the noon rally on July 4th, the next day at the town clock, give a call to 423-4833, 423-HUFF.
Thanks a lot for letting me on the radio, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Have a great show.
You too. And our lines are open. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, is beaming at you. And the line, if you've forgotten the number, is 427-3772. 427-3772. Adjust the old phone here so it blinks rather than rings. So I'm going to have to keep my eye on the blinker so that I don't miss your calls. So you can call. Hope you do. We can use you on the air because wonderful as I am, I'm only me. And one is fun, but two, it what it takes to make a shoe, as Ed Sullivan would say. So give us a call, and let's hear some more from the Camp Paradise festivities on Saturday. Last Saturday, a week ago, that is, and we will also be doing some updates. I just want to say that I, frankly, am not at all convinced that the police aren't going to show up there tomorrow. I don't believe that there is anything binding in a secret agreement that is not, you know, publicly revealed, and I think it's a matter of deep concern to me that this hasn't been done in a more public way, although perhaps that's the only way that this secrecy-oriented city council and this very secrecy-oriented police department would operate. But I don't think it can hold up for very long if, unless there are some real judicial safeguards. And I'm not persuaded that that is the case yet. Perhaps we'll get a call from Attorney Paul Sanford reassuring us, though, again, a lot of this is so hush-hush and behind the scenes that I worry. I worry when attorneys do this kind of stuff because they tend to they sidestep the larger community. They sidestep the larger activists. They sometimes have a rather very specific and narrow sense of who it is they're working for, what they're trying to do, and frequently attorneys don't have a political sense of what they're doing and realize the implications of this for the larger community. And not always. I'm not saying that Paul Sanford does or doesn't have this perspective per se. I'm just concerned that there isn't an injunction, for example, filed for around this issue, a broader-based approach being used. Instead, this is all being undertaken behind closed doors with a lot of assurances to the campers, and I think some misinformation coming out. So I'm a little bit concerned, and I'm going to keep my eye on this. And one of the problems is that what information you do find, you're suddenly told to keep it in confidence, and it's all supposed to be hush hush, so you can't really present it to the community. But I would simply say to the community broadly that there is no clear assurance, as far as I'm concerned, that the police are not going to move on Camp Paradise at any particular time. But Camp Paradise residents disagree with me. They think there is such assurance. So they may have better information than I do, though I don't think so. Could be. And I encourage the community and Camp Paradise and Camp Paradise supporters to be ready to move at a moment's notice to be down at the camp to support campers if police show up there with the intention of making them refugees and deporting them from an area they have improved, that they have made livable, that they have made actually open to the public so the public can use the area as well. I mean, it's outrageous, the kinds of threats that have come from the police department around this issue. And if part of the deal between the residents of Camp Paradise and the city has been to keep a low profile, I am very wary, because a low profile is one way of lulling supporters to sleep and letting the police and city council take what has been their traditional approach, which is roll them out of sight and roll them out of town. That's just what they do. Schmooze them to death if they get high profile and roll them out of town once nobody's looking, once the pressure is off. And that is, of course, unconscionable. It's human rights violation, but it's business as usual in Santa Cruz, and we have to realize that. And there's also this business of dividing the Camp Paradise residents from the broader homeless community. You know, my understanding from Camp Paradise residents is they are going to be coming to this July 4th rally, which talks about supporting Camp Paradise and other poor people. You heard Jim Costner talking about the noon rally at the town clock coming up, and that's true. But there has been a definite quieting down of any kind of support for Camp Paradise in terms of what Camp Paradise residents seem to have been looking for.
meetings have been canceled. There's kind of a, I think there's this almost a, call it a fear, or call it a, you know, call it an attitude, which is sort of we've got to trust our attorney, we've got to trust our city council here, or the notion that there's somehow going to be time if the city council and the police decide to violate this anyway to do something, and we, all you got to do is stop organizing. It's like, it's like the company telling a union, you know, stop organizing and we'll give you what you want. I don't believe it. It's just not, it's not credible. And particularly in secret compacts. I really don't believe secret compacts. So that is a problem I'm having with the situation, and I encourage people who are interested, if they want to, they can certainly talk to the people at Camp Paradise if they're willing to talk about it. They've previously been very vocal about it. Now they seem less so. They may well be listening to this broadcast, and I invite them to call in and talk if they want, though they may have made a deal not to do that. See, that's the problem, you know, that suddenly you're gagged because an attorney has given you this particular advice and it reassures you. Well, the attorney is not going to go to jail, and the attorney is not going to be evicted from the property. The attorney doesn't suffer any of the consequences, nor do I. So I want to be real clear about that. I don't live at Camp Paradise. I'm not homeless. I just give you my thoughts on the situation because I've seen other campgrounds destroyed by the city council. I've seen other agreements broken, such as the open-air shelter Coral Street agreement of 1995, which Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless signed with SOS, Save Our Shelters, the group that of campers who organized to run the Coral Street open-air shelter. And they were just blatantly betrayed by these men in collusion with Kennedy, Councilmember Kennedy, and Mayor Rotkin at that time. And I don't see that things have markedly improved in terms of public process. When I get arrested every week at City Council, by which I mean told by police under threat of armed force to leave council chambers, that to me is an arrest, and it's the basis for a false arrest suit. It's not a custodial arrest. I'm not dragged away to court. Charges generally haven't been preferred against me, though who knows when Mayor Fitzmaurice will decide to do it, because I raise my hand in a Nazi salute after he has shut somebody up or told somebody they can't have a sign up, or refused to extend oral communications, or refused to give an answer about an agenda item which the public has the right to know about, a whole series of specific concerns. I am not in the habit of giving the Nazi salute because I'm annoyed with someone. I do it when a public official violates a public trust in a repressive manner, and it has a very specific political content. And Fitzmaurice's latest statement, the last city council, was that if I do that again, I will face ejection, which means I may face arrest, because I believe as a member of the public, that is arrest, of course, but I mean custodial arrest as well. I believe as a member of the public, I have the right to be in a public meeting, and I have the right to make political opinion known at the public meeting, provided it is not disruptive. The fact that he doesn't like it does not mean it is disruptive. The Sieg Heil motion, which indicates we think you're acting like a bunch of fascists, and it's a silent motion, is not one that disrupts city council meetings. It does upset those who are in power because they don't like being characterized as people who are repressive. But that goes with the territory. You have to be able to address and tolerate such expressions of opinion, or in fact, you show that you are the very thing that you claim not want to be, you not want to be labeled or called. It's kind of ironic. But there it is. Anyway, more from Camp Paradise. Here's a bit from a week ago Saturday, and the barbecue and some interviews that happened there.
So it's somewhere between 2 and 2:30 on June 23rd, Saturday 2001. We're approaching, here's Paul. Did I miss the festivities, Paul? Oh, cool. So, Paul, what do you make of all this?
Exhorting the crowd.
You were exhorting? You're an attorney, aren't you, Paul?
Yes, Robert.
What is an attorney doing in a illegal campground like this?
Presently, I'm going to get a drink for my wife and small son.
I can talk to you in a bit.
I'll be happy to chat with you on the record in like 10 minutes.
Sounds good. We're here at the meeting at 2:50.
I'm not going to leave this area.
Here's Andreas, who was here last night.
And I want to progress, and I want to uplift, and then if there's a better home, I'll be happy to go to a better home. But, and there's just dozens of people for whom this is a home, and who want to build a home, and who want to seek a better home. But as far as reflecting goes, that's what we lack, you know, and that's the job of the public. We have to start to reflecting, what's the solution here? And so I have an idea on that. I think the beautiful, you know, I think we have two different things involved. We have people who need a home, and this is the best home they got, and we have to respect that. But we also have an individual, and maybe more than one, but certainly we have Larry, who says, I want to live here. I know this river valley. I don't want to leave. I'll have my things here, you know? And I think someone with that much vision who's done so much, I think we have to take it seriously and start to think, who could be a better steward for this area? Yeah, the public doesn't want to have all the homeless of the world come here, but they don't have to come here. They can come and uplift and move on. But if we have a person like Larry who's granted stewardship, maybe he has a private company, maybe it's got all the papers, but he says, hey, I will take care of this particular corner that's been bad, and I'll do it legally, and you give me some slack, but let's make this work. So that's my idea. Rest, we move in, we move out, we move in, we move out, we try not to get arrested. So, but to realize that, to realize all the different, and also to encourage the public to be a little bit creative, I think the most positive thing for the public is the idea that here are happy people, here are wonderfully happy people who live an alternative life, and even if just a handful of people remind us that, you know, there's other ways to be happy, that's a tremendous great thing for all of us. So those are my thoughts.
All right.
Music.
I want to thank you, everybody. But before we go on any further, we have two people that's part of our community. They're homeless people like the rest of us. That's Elizabeth Gibbs and Patty Long. They passed away. Today, we'd like to have everybody just bow your heads, close your eyes.
Larry Templeton is talking about Elizabeth Gipps and Patty Long, who actually had a service the same day that this barbecue happened a week ago Saturday. Elizabeth and Patty, I probably will talk about them a little bit later in the show. I stayed in their house for a month when I was first becoming working intensely on activism in 1988 on the, I guess it was the Petition for Human Rights or Homeless Rights. And Patty and I have disagreed on occasion, though I think he's come increasingly, we kind of have veered together. He became increasingly skeptical of the city council and the social service agencies and concerned about police misconduct. He was a little, I think we had an argument about WHAM and whether they were a help or a hindrance in terms of the broader marijuana patient community, but I had a lot of respect for Patty and Elizabeth and some affection for them both. Anyway, we'll talk about that later, perhaps.
You can see right there Fox, which is KILN and KCBA-TV, is still here. Apparently the Mercury News was here, but I didn't speak with them. The Santa Cruz Sentinel was here, and I'm not sure. Community Cable TV, Channel 2, I think. I'm not sure whom else.
That's a bunch. I thought that they would come later because, the last minute we're talking about postponing the press conference because of the conflict with the Patty Long Elizabeth Gipps ceremony over at the San Lorenzo Park. But you're a volunteer attorney here who sort of stepped in to try to help out Camp Paradise. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm not sure my fee structure is relevant, and usually you don't discuss that, but it's true that I'm doing this pro bono.
Big bucks, man, for heaven's sake.
But I'm representing, Mr. Templeton retained me to represent his interest and those of the core campers at Camp Paradise, yes.
And has the city attorney called you to sue for peace?
No, I did make a courtesy call to the city attorney as well as several members of the council and the police department to introduce myself, to request that communications came through me, and in fact had a cordial and brief chat with Mr. Barrisoni, which I'm not privileged to discuss during this meeting.
Well, I hope he gave you some important news, but somehow I doubt he did. But who knows? I'm always so skeptical about such things. Any reactions to the campground? I mean, after all, we do have all these slovenly, low-income people leaving their tents all over this otherwise pristine wilderness. How can you involve yourself in such an activity?
Well, frankly, I'm humbled and honored to be associated with Mr. Templeton and to the people who have taken dramatic actions to restore this environment to its pristine beauty, who have done appropriate and responsible things environmentally, socially, and in every other fashion. This is a model. Today, what we're seeing at Camp Paradise is about the solution and not about the problem. It counters all of the myths and stereotypes surrounding so-called homeless folks. In fact, these people came to this environment, cleaned it up, hauled away thousands of pounds of debris, garbage, including syringes, established an alcohol and drug-free zone, and they need to be applauded. And we're here today celebrating the accomplishments of these, frankly, brave and honorable folks. And at the same time, we're extending an olive branch to the city and the city council, saying, frankly, like Joan Rivers used to say, let's talk. We believe, at least I believe, that there's a win-win here. I believe there's a way to protect the legitimate interests of the city. The city is not the enemy. The city does have legitimate interests to protect surrounding these issues. I believe that there's a way that the city's legitimate interests can be served, as well as the profound and perhaps more important interests of these individuals, families, and young children who are improving the environment. Our third message beyond celebration and discussions with the city is that we're reaching out to the private sector, to the churches, synagogues, businesses, and private landowners. If you have a property that you'd like to see similarly fixed, rehabilitated, and improved, whether it's this group or others, there are hardworking members of our community who would probably do the same. So we hope that this is a model that can be replicated and shared across the nation. In a clarion call, we're saying that these people are terrific, they're doing the right thing, and we're celebrating their work, and we're asking the public and private sector to join in and be supportive.
Wow. Well, Paul, let me ask you this.
Did I say too much, Robert?
Not at all.
Okay?
The more you say, the more I like you. What can I say? Because I'm a windbag, and I like other windbags on occasion. And if the wind is a good, as long as it's not an ill wind.
Grateful to share the wind.
Amen. Let's blow on. But
I have about, I got two more minutes, but not much more than that, because I've got family obligations.
Nah. Well, here's a thought for you.
And by the way, my wife and 5-month old daughter and 5-year-old boy were here, and they had a terrific time, and they loved and enjoyed the environment as well.
And they weren't polluted by contact with the homeless community here?
In truth, it's a terrific thing to expose children to all environments, and this is a pristine, beautiful place that's well-respected by the residents. I'm thrilled to be here.
The tickets that these people will get and the basis for destroying their campsite and bulldozing this very well-kept area is going to be Municipal Code 6.36010, the camping ban. Actually, the sleeping ban and the blanket ban may be used too, but probably just the camping ban provisions. In a city which has no shelter for 1,000 to 2,000 people, as an attorney, do you see any potential legal avenues for challenging the camping ban as a, should we say, an infringement on certain basic constitutional rights and needs people have? Have you given any thought to that?
I have thought about all of the various and sundry remedies and avenues available to the residents and to the homeless community at large, particularly in the context of the new seemingly arbitrary 30-day limit in the state park. So come June 30th, in addition to whatever happens here, the county is facing a profound crisis. I'm not well-educated enough or informed in terms of specific recommendations. So have I thought about it? Sure. Do I have any answers? No. I believe that this park will not be bulldozed. I believe that the police will not shut down this park. I believe that there will be a negotiated settlement that protects and serves the interests of everyone. And I can't tell you what that will look like, but that's what dialogue and meaningful discussion is about. And I don't think that there's been, to date, a meaningful dialogue or discussion between the residents of the camp and the city. And that's what I'm trying to engender, an environment where those discussions can, in fact, happen so that we avoid any kind of draconian theoretical response.
So can we, and though you said you can't talk about your conversation with, I always call him Bad News Barrasoni, not because I don't like him personally, he's a nice guy actually, but because I often see the bad news coming from him. Are you saying you have more optimism? Let's put it this way. Do you have more optimism today
than you did 2 days ago?
Yesterday was the first day that I became actively engaged in this matter. In fact, all I knew previous to that was what I'd read in the press and an informal conversation I had with you about it. So there are others, probably including yourself, who are substantially more well-informed than me on the issues to be addressed.
With more extensive bathrobe attire.
And further, I believe that I was optimistic yesterday, and I'm all the more optimistic today, having seen the outpouring of community support, having seen, frankly, the realistic, optimistic, and appropriate attitude of the people here who aren't enemies of the city and who are all doing the right thing. So I believe that there's a logical solution that can be crafted if we're all patient and sit down and have meaningful conversations.
Now, folks want to provide some legal assistance to Camp Paradise, either for you or for other attorneys working on this matter, since I understand there is some other legal folks working on a possible injunction to, in the event that your good work fails, that, you know, we need to have some legal protection. Is there a number they can call, or is there any way they can donate their financial support or their offer of assistance?
Legal, financial, social support, advocacy skills, ideas, goodwill can all be directed through me, and I will funnel them appropriately to the best of my ability. People can call me at home. It's best to call my home number, 476-2468. It's Paul Sanford, and feel free to give me a call or leave a message. If you have something, some constructive way to engage in this dialogue, whether you want to make a donation, whether you have an idea, legal or otherwise, give me a call for sure, 476-2468.
And the times to call, in which hours?
I'd say generally calls would be most well received between 10 a.m. and 6:30 p.m.
Thank you, Paul, and I appreciate your jumping on board a ship that may not be sinking after all.
And that was Attorney Paul Sanford 8 days ago speaking at the Camp Paradise barbecue. I've just contacted Paul on the phone, and we're going to now go to a phone interview with him. A live phone interview, actually, and hopefully we can get some updates on what's been happening. We're calling him now. Here we go.
Hello.
Hello, looking for Paul.
Yes, Mrs. Calling, please.
Yes, this is Robert Norris on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
1 moment, please.
Hi, Paul Sanford.
Yes.
We got you live on 96.3, and I want to thank you. It's the rare attorney who takes calls at home on a Sunday.
How are you doing, Robert?
I'm good. At least I got a roof over my head, and I'm not looking both ways to see if the police are coming to take my tent, which for 95% of the homeless seems to be the case in Santa Cruz, but maybe Camp Paradise isn't in that situation anymore.
Well, I think if anyone living outdoors is in a tenuous position at best. I think it's very difficult life for anyone who's without a traditional home. I am encouraged that I feel like the climate has improved. The discussions, informal discussions with the city, seem to have gone well in the sense that today is July 1st and there is not a July 1st deadline anymore. I'm not sure how that deadline ever originated or how that came to pass, but in that sense, I think things are better. That I don't think there's any imminent threat of our friends. And these campers really are unbelievably great and responsible people. It's really nice to see that at least for a little while longer, and hopefully much longer, they'll have a safe place at the camp, and perhaps an even better place in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you were going in to talk to city council members at their closed session, which, of course, any citizen can do in the open interval before the session closes. I've done it. How did that go, insofar as you can let us know what you learned or what hopes you now have?
Yeah, well, I don't know what your experience has been. It was an unusual thing. I had only recently been made aware that the first part of the closed session is, in fact, open to the public. I made a presentation just outlining my concerns and the position of my clients. I did not get feedback at that particular session. It was more my opportunity, I think, to clarify that I'm representing peaceful, responsible people who've restored the natural environment and who are trying their best to do the right thing. And so I sort of just made my generic stump speech around how terrific the campers are and how difficult the problem is and how the problem gets even more intractable when artificial deadlines are set up. And I felt like I got my message out, but there was not really any back and forth at that meeting.
You know, the city attorney usually gives a brief, usually unenlightening report on the closed session and what actions are taken, usually at a time when nobody's listening, about 5 or 6 hours later at the end of the usual city council meeting. Do you know what the eventual action, if any, was reported out about that closed session?
I'm not aware that there was any reported out. I presume if it's required that it must have happened. I don't know if it's required or not. Mm-hmm. My strong sense is there is no action, and in truth, no action or inaction from our perspective is a really good thing. I don't expect, it would seem to me very unlikely that the city will take any affirmative action in any way certifying Camp Paradise as a legal thing or in any way sort of denoting it as a proper use of that particular land. One is, based on the city ordinances, I don't know whether they could or would make that legal decision. In addition, right or wrong, I think some city leaders are concerned that doing anything public that would in any way sanction this might, if anything, invite more folks to do the same thing. I'm not saying that would be a bad idea, but it seems to me that the city leaders are not in a position where they want to encourage more people living along the river, no matter how clean and responsible they are. And for better or worse, I think that most city leaders have the sense that they're not hoping that this model will, in fact, be repeated up and down the banks of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a position on whether that would be appropriate, but I think that those are some of the concerns why I think what they're doing is just giving everyone a chance to stay calm and see if we can protect everyone's legitimate interests. Because the city does have a legitimate interest in terms of any given site to make sure it's safe, healthy, that there's no threat to the environment, and so forth. I think these folks at this site have proven beyond a doubt that they're not a threat to anyone, and they're not a threat to the environment. In fact, they've renewed the environment. So that's why I'm so proud to know and be a little bit associated with these folks.
Well, I know that the city assistant manager, a number of planning officials all came down to the camp, I believe it was after the Tuesday council session, and spoke to campers and looked around.
I think it was the morning prior I think it was the morning of the council. The afternoon was the closed session, and the council met, I guess, Tuesday evening. I think it was in the morning that a group of folks from the planning department and at least one person from law enforcement went out for a visit, and I think they saw a really tidy, well-kept place.
Mm-hmm. I know that one of them, I think even on tape, may have said that they were positively impressed. Did you get any response from council members or members of the city bureaucracy later in response to your presentation? Did they express some interest in talking to you, let's say, informally about the issues?
I've had some fairly brief conversations with some folks associated with the city, including one or two council members, but nothing formal. And frankly, all the feedback that I get is encouraging. I think there's a lot of concern about the homeless and the camping issue in general. I think there's a lot of frustration, city residents and city officials, that there's a big problem. I think everyone acknowledges that. And I think I don't think anyone thinks that the kind of folks out at Camp Paradise are part of the problem. I think it's somewhat understood that they're actually a big part of the solution. But there's, you know, I don't expect ever to be forthcoming any kind of formal or informal notification that the city thinks that it's a good idea and fine for them to stay, even though there might be some individual council members that share that viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have no formal feedback. The fact that July 1 has come and tomorrow will be gone, and the city wasn't contemplating any action today or last week, suggests to me that something positive must have come out of the dialogue, because I feel certain it makes sense. I don't know for a fact, but intuitively I would certainly expect that the city attorney has communicated to the police department and to other appropriate city departments, including planning, what the direction or non-direction of the council might be.
Now,
and I think those are all good things.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that you have nothing in your possession at the time, at this time, which constitutes a commitment, a written commitment from the city not to disperse the campground, at least to give them time to, you know, I guess you've been looking for private donors to, you know, provide...
Yeah, I'm not aware of the city taking any formal position, nor any written position on this matter in any way. And for me, I think that's probably, as an advocate for the campers out at Paradise, I think that's probably the best we could reasonably hope for. So there's no, I'm not aware that there's any directive to do anything destructive with regard to the campground, but I'm also not aware that there's any kind of formal sanctioning or formal approval of it. So I think we're in this kind of limbo where the deadline is gone. I think there's no doubt all around the community, in the city and otherwise, there's a unanimity that if the campers find an even nicer location where they don't feel as threatened, they've stated that they would be happy to move and even able to pay a meaningful rent. Mm-hmm. I think people somehow get the idea sometimes based on stereotypes that just because you're homeless means that you don't have a job and that you can't pay rent and all those things. And mm-hmm. these people can't perhaps pay market rate, but I think they'd rather live someplace where they can pay rent and really feel secure in their home and not concerned about being disrupted from the outside.
Sure, being able to work and come home to a place to sleep is, I think, key for a lot of us.
Yeah, and having a place that has a legal sanction can only be a good thing, I believe, for families. And what I mean is, I'm not in any way conceding that it's illegal for the campers to be at their present location. Mm-hmm. I think that's the city's position, and I'm not out to really fight that position either, because I think it's counterproductive to turn this into a battle of ordinances. But it seems to me that all the campers and people in general, almost exclusively, would prefer to live in places that some government officials don't think is illegal, mm-hmm. and because I think it's just it's not a good way to live. There's probably a very small group of people who are either, who for whatever reason wouldn't mind that, perhaps as a form of civil disobedience, who might feel comfortable living their lives in a place where they're told they're not allowed to be. But I don't think this group is trying to so much make a point as trying to just be healthy, productive members of society. And if we could get them into a safe, beautiful area where they're not under the threat of any suggestions that they're living illegally, then I think that would be terrific.
Yeah, I don't think that actually, I know of no homeless people who are making a point by being homeless. I mean, there are people who say that Vietnam vets, or they can't be indoors. There are people who say that they prefer to be outdoors, but I don't think anybody
right.
enjoys being in an illegal status.
Yeah, and I hope my comments aren't interpreted to...
Right.
I didn't intend that. What I intended to say, I think, is that I was very careful to try to avoid using words like no one and never and, mm-hmm. and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unthinkable to me that there could be a human being somewhere
mm-hmm.
who might want to live in a zone that's challenged because they believe that the whole idea of having zones where it's illegal to sleep and live needs to be challenged.
So just so I'm real clear on this,
yeah.
you don't have any document, private understanding between city council members, the police, the city attorney, that guarantees that the campers aren't going to be, for example, visited by police in the next 2 weeks. You have no such document in your possession?
No. Not only do I have no such document, I'm not aware of any official city action either positive or negative with regard to the status of the campers. So, but the answer is no. I don't have any documents from the city, nor do I believe the city has done anything formal about this issue.
Well, you know,
I think that's frankly a good thing because I'm not expecting to get
mm-hmm.
any kind of formal resolution that affirms that these people can live there.
I hear you there. One of the concerns that a lot of us have had is that the police department seems to act independently of the city council. I mean, we have the city manager, strong city manager system of government, weak council, whereby the city manager controls the police department, and the council gives its recommendations to the city manager, who then passes them on to the police.
Now, the manager, though, does serve the council, correct?
The city manager, you know, is, in a sense, he does, yes. I mean, but
he's employed by them.
But he is, as I call him city manager for life, Dick Wilson, because though numerous folks have wanted to see him replaced repeatedly, that's never even been proposed by any city council. Even those who've, been extremely hostile to him when he was when they were running their campaigns, as Crone and Sugar were, at least they seemed to be at that time, 98. My concern is the police department often seems to have a life of its own, and I'm, as the attorney who's trying to protect the interests of some of the campers at Camp Paradise, what kind of protections do they have if the police if the police choose to move independently and say, this is the law, we've decided that, you know, we're going to do this. I mean, my concern is that in the community, the consensus that has been organized is to say, look, as you've been saying, you know, that there's a good thing going here, and people are just doing what they have to do, and in fact, they're making the area better. And one way to get the city council and the police to back off has been to stir up a kind of community support that isn't hostile, but that is clearly supportive of what these folks are doing.
And I think that's been our message. That's what we're trying to celebrate and share and show off with pride what these folks have accomplished. And interestingly enough, by the way, many of the neighbors in that area of the city have come and joined in the support from the community of this encampment, because now they feel like they can safely pass through an area that they didn't previously feel comfortable entering.
So I've heard.
There's been an awful lot of community support, but I think you were leading toward a question. I think I cut you off.
That's okay. I mean, yeah, what I'm saying is there has previously been kind of an arrangement that if, in order to deter, say, an inappropriate and ill-advised use of police to rush down and eliminate camps, as they have in other areas, admittedly not necessarily clean and sober camps, but not necessarily drug camps either, just people with tents.
Okay.
They've been going after them in the Poganip and so forth, and ticketing them and harassing them. To forestall that, there has been the sort of a community effort that has said, if we hear anything like that is happening, many members of the community will come down to witness with video cameras, with tape recorders, with peaceful intentions, certainly, but with an eye to letting the police and the city council know the eye of the community will be upon you if you take this action, which we believe is precipitous. Now, I'm concerned that folks, you know, hearing your assurance, and may well be the case that the city council and the police have said, look, we're going to give you some time to find this property, or seem to be saying that in one way or another.
Yeah, I think that's not exactly my message, but that's not inconsistent with my message.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that folks remain ready, that if there's a change in the wind, that folks come down to support that campground and to say, look, we're members of the community, and we don't want to see anybody's, not just their civil rights denied, but an important experiment, an important a living situation for people simply swept away because the police have decided to do it, or the city council for political reasons has decided they're going to act on it. I mean, what I'm trying to say here, I think I'm probably saying it already, is are you suggesting that people be less, are you saying everything's okay, don't worry about it, leave it, you know, you don't have to come down and be ready to support Camp Paradise anymore?
I don't know that I have a clear unilateral message here.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult thing for a lawyer to say.
I understand.
But I do not believe that there's any imminent threat, and I just don't have a candid answer or an honest answer to the I think the hypothetical question is, if it turns out that the camp is being shut down, or there's very strong evidence that the camp is about to be shut down, what might be the appropriate response of supportive members of the community?
Mm-hmm.
In most hypotheticals like that, I would say the approach you outline is thoroughly appropriate. If peaceful citizens want to observe conduct of public officials, including the police, and record them and express concern, that's in the finest traditions of this country and of our community. In this exact matter, if I hypothetically were about to learn that the police are about to close the camp, I don't know yet and I won't be able to dictate the response in any way, but it would all depend on what events happened leading up to it and what the other prospects were for my client. So I just don't know whether it would, depending on how the facts were to play out, I'm very optimistic that we'll never get to that hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
If we do, I think we'll, at least I know from my perspective, I'll be playing it by ear with my first and primary and perhaps exclusive focus on how to best protect and represent my 15 clients.
Mm-hmm.
But I will not be unmindful of I'm also a member of the community who's concerned about equity and appropriate conduct, both on the public side and on the private side, and I will stay mindful of my responsibilities as a citizen and member of the community as well, but my primary obligation needs to be to my clients. So I just can't, and it wouldn't be helpful for me to speculate on what I would do, because I don't think we're going to get to that. I think that we're going to find an equitable way to find a better location, in the sense of one where there's no threat of closure, prior to that need for the city to move. And people ask me, well, when's that going to be? And people are kind of curious, oh, well, how are you going to do that? And when will they be going to a safer place, in the sense of a place where there's not a threat of being uprooted? And all I know is that I'm trying and have some leads, but there's no way I can put a date on that one. Mm-hmm. And I think that would probably be frustrating to people who believe the camp should be shut down, and that's something that I can't do. But I'm still optimistic. I don't see it coming to a head. I think we've had a lot more light and less heat around the discussions, and I think that climate where we're all, you know, I think has engendered an environment that allows me to feel like there's not a big threat of anything unusual happening.
Do you think the willingness of the community to, in fact, come down and show its concern about any premature police closure or city council action on this has been helpful in putting you in a position to be able to get some kind of, if you have it, moratorium on this action?
Yeah, and I wouldn't describe it as moratorium or any other particular term, but the short answer is yes. I think I didn't organize the potluck. I was lucky enough to be invited and speak at it. But I thought that event, where apparently literally hundreds, perhaps 200 or 300 members of the community came out and saw this beautiful restoration and saw these hardworking, honest people doing the right thing, I think that's helped a lot. It helped that city officials have gone out. At least one member of the council, along with police officers, people in the planning department. I think that all the eyes that have seen it, and either directly or through the magic lens of television, have painted a picture that's accurate, that shows that there is no threat to the environment, there's no threat to the community presented by this camping. And I think that has been very helpful. At this point, I don't think it's required to sort of keep up, to beat the drum and keep getting a lot of publicity and keep bringing people out, because I think the city understands now that if there are any camps out there, there may be some camps out there. I understand, and you would know better, I understand that camp is perhaps the wrong term, but there's no doubt there are a lot of people living outside and in tents in our community. And it seems to me that the people at Paradise pose no threat, and I'm guessing, and I don't know, have any evidence, and I hope it's not true, that there could be some camps that aren't as safe, that aren't as tidy, that don't have porta potties, and that aren't drug and alcohol free. And I think getting the message out that these are drug and alcohol free people who cleaned up the environment and who the neighbors love, the fact that the community now knows, has definitely helped a lot. You know, the story's getting a lot of press because it's unusual. The media so often portrays homeless people as sort of drags on society, and that's why it's such an honor to be associated with the people out at Paradise, because they're beating back those stereotypes in a profound way. And the model, one of the reasons why I'm so proud of how they're acting and pleased to be associated with them, is that there's no violence here, there's no resistance in the sense of people making trouble. I think they're so proud of their work, and we're all hoping that this model can be replicated, and that other people who don't have a place, who find themselves in the position of needing to live on land that they don't technically own, may be able to replicate this model by establishing sober environments and by cleaning up property and helping the public see that they're part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Well, I know that some of the campers and a number of the supporters are going to be at a 4th of July rally on noon July 4th town clock, and one of the objectives here is not merely to support broader civil rights protections for homeless people throughout the community, including other campers and the right to sleep somewhere legally, but also to consider kind of a support group, including people from Camp Paradise and people who are in houses, for those campers who would like to see other camps like Camp Paradise established in different places, private, public, you name it, but places where people can, you know, live at least temporarily, given the incredible rent emergency and shelter emergency. And you, of course, are invited to come to this noon rally on July 4th to speak if you wish to.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And I'll have to look at other commitments that day, and I'll certainly let you know, and I'm honored to be invited. I'm not positive yet.
We're talking to Attorney Paul Sanford, who is representing some of the Camp Paradise folks. And I guess the last thing, or nearly the last thing, since you...
Yeah, because I've got to run in about 60 seconds.
Oh, boy. Well, you spoke in a previously recorded segment we played about your concern about the state parks altering their policies to penalize homeless people using the state parks, because now they're allowed only 30 days per year before they have to no longer use it. And this is only in Santa Cruz, some sort of strange Santa Cruz or state regulation there. Any further thoughts on that?
I'd be really curious to know what the public policy is behind this new interpretation of the law, and it's surprising to me that to have an administrative finding of such substance. Traditionally, these are the type of public policy decisions that are made by legislative bodies and sometimes by executive agencies who are given specifically the discretion to do it. I think it was just a very unusual ruling. There might be some reason behind it that's sensible, but I'd love to see, and you're probably digging around, I'm guessing, to try to find out what the actual justification is and why only one tiny community in a big, vast state is doing this. Is this a test? Is there a reason? Is this arbitrary? I don't know the answers, but I think it's perplexing to have such a ruling made that will have such a profound effect on so many lives without us understanding the context or basically understanding why. So it perplexes me, and I haven't researched it. And frankly, you have people like you who chronicle these issues, and that's, by the way, great that I appreciate with your show and with you kind of keeping track of what's happened at Paradise, for example. That's going to make it easier in the future to replicate this model, I think, between the media and your work and Becky Johnson's and a lot of other people, plus the lives, the stories of Larry and the other folks at the camp, is going to hopefully make it possible that if there are other people who want to replicate this model and do something similar, whether it's on public land or private land, that it can happen again. And I think I think this is really exciting, but it's a long way of coming back to say I know some about Camp Paradise and a lot about this, the confusion surrounding that issue this week. I'm not the best informed guy on homeless issues at large. So
you better get informed.
I can't tell you that for a fact that this was the wrong decision made, but it confuses me that it was made, and I don't understand it.
Paul, you finally you said when we spoke last week that folks could give you a call if they wanted to offer support for Camp Paradise in numerous ways. Are you still extending your number in that way?
Yeah, if anyone who's got constructive ideas who could, particularly about helping in the relocation, we're actively looking at and trying to find a parcel of land. There are people, private sector folks who've stepped forward with donations with a lot of great ideas on relocation. So anyway, my home number is 476-2468, and I'll say it a couple times, and maybe Robert, you could say it once or more during this program. I'd rather have it not repeated continually because I want to see how much response I get and whether it's disruptive to my home life.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody call in so far? Have you gotten any kind of...
Yeah, I've received calls from some very generous and kind-hearted folks, some who are offering energy, some who are offering wisdom, some who've offered to raise some money, some who have ideas about property, some who own things like trailers and so forth that they might be able to rent or lend out. But until something formal happens, I suppose it's all talk.
Well, if you find anybody with a room, I'm looking for a room, so keep that in mind.
Maybe you'd like to live with me. I'll ask my wife.
Hey, well, we'll have to talk about that.
That would be news.
476-2468 to reach Paul Sanford, who's attorney for a number of the Camp Paradise residents. And anything more you want to add, Paul?
No, I just, it's an honor to be on your show, and I hope you have a terrific day.
Thanks for taking the time, Paul.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And you, too, can take some time if you'd like to give us a call if you want. Our lines are open, 427-3772. Looks like we got a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, are you on the air?
Yeah.
Jackpot. Man, I've been playing this telephone like a slot machine.
Yeah, that sounds like Rockman D to me.
153 times I called when I started to count.
Steve Elliott, you are a man who knows how to use the redial button. Or perhaps
no, there's no redial on a payphone. You got to sit there and pick it up, and then they have to wait for the dial tone, then you have to put the money in, dial.
Well, I commend
you. Then there's somebody that says, thank you,
yes.
Or deposit 25 cents. You got to hang up, start over.
Well, I know that we last spoke, and I saw you actually, a few days ago, but in court on Friday, you faced the music, which is to say the dragnet, for the crime of obstructing the sidewalk, at least according to Officer RoboCop.
No, it's for the crime of holding a homeless hungry sign, and they were using that to get at me for the homeless hungry sign.
Officer Perry didn't like your, in your view, the homeless hungry sign. He saw your small rock sculptures off to the side near Logos Bookshop, though certainly by the pictures the pictures you showed me, not in any way blocking the sidewalk, and he gave you a ticket without any warning for obstructing the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And I know that you were in court. You've spent many hours in the law library.
Oh,
so 48,
man, have I spent hours in the law library.
48,
I got to know my first name, man.
48, 49 questions, and we were kind of running through some questions. I was giving you my, solicited.
You want me to read some of them here? I wrote them down.
Unprofessional. Well, I don't know if we want to read the questions on the air. You don't want to give your strategy away to all those police officers listening. Come on, guys, you got to do your own research. But, I mean, I know that one concern I had is that you are essentially given a ticket for an action which is not a crime, holding up, we're talking about, actually, that's something else we're talking about. But
okay, two tickets. I got a second ticket.
Right, let's not talk about that yet, because I think that's another matter that I think we need to, you and I were discussing some political strategies around that, and I think we've already mentioned your second ticket, as you say, was for, supposedly violating the panhandling law, where you were holding a sign which Sergeant Baker, who seems to be getting big going after musicians and other people.
And old babies pushing shopping
bicyclists.
Carts.
I think you mentioned that in the last show, or perhaps you haven't.
No, it just happened, man. When he was harassing me for the sign the second time, he came up to harass me, didn't even remember he gave me a ticket. Some old lady, walks by with a shopping cart, and he just tore into her like she was like 16 or 17 or 20. How, you treat some of those people. Just treated her really mean and viciously. And then he came and smiled and started talking to me again, like everything's all fine and dandy, but he just like turned automatically and looked at this old lady, "Where you going, man, Clark?" And she said, "I got it right down the street in that doorway." And he goes, "We're taking it all the way back to New Leaf right now." And he pointed out on this the seat where the little kid sat. It flops up and down. And
we're talking about Sergeant Lauren, a.k.a. Butchie Baker, the mall sergeant?
Baker. I don't know what they call him, Butchie.
Yeah, Baker is Lauren or Butchie is the only Baker I know of. I also heard of him engaging in harassment of somebody else more recently across from New Leaf Market, a matter that I have been asked to keep in confidence, but it sounds like Baker is a busy sergeant, and I must say I'm concerned about his behavior, and he was the only officer I know of that we actually put out a wanted poster on. We had his picture on the wanted poster for molesting 9 or 10 women back in 1992. The city council actually established a subcommittee to investigate Baker, and the city manager quashed the investigation immediately.
Of course,
city manager for life, Dick Wilson, we're talking about, who seems to have more sympathies with the police department than with the community, or certainly than with women who are affected by violence or misconduct against police.
Yeah,
police
officers. Protect their own and forget the citizen. They can get away, take off. Who cares?
Right. Well, you're preparing a case. I know you were able to find an ordinance that allows, in fact, requires the courts not just to allow you to make an audio tape recording of the court proceeding, but that actually
it argues my right. The judge said, remember?
Well, let me say this: that what it does is, as far as I can read from the code section you showed me, and that I previously didn't really know about it until activist Richard Quigley brought it to my attention, is that. It requires the court to itself put you into a courtroom where there is adequate audio recording equipment so that all the witnesses' statements are clear, so that the judge's voice can be heard, so that the attorney's voices can be heard, in essence, so that everything can be heard, and then to get you a copy of that, though if you're not indigent, you have to pay for it. And
I was told $20.
I had never known that this was required until about a month ago when activist Richard Quigley, who's the biker guy, who's been fighting the helmet law for a long time and has spoken on this show, brought it to my attention, and you went out of your way, found the statute, and you brought it into Department 1 to talk to the judge and try to get him to agree.
No, I introduced it downstairs at the clerk's office, downstairs in the basement.
Right, but
and
you...
she put it in, and they had it in the folder already. They knew about it.
But I guess when I took it to...
That was a copy I just gave you.
Right, but when we went into the courtroom on Friday, the judge seemed to be less than enthusiastic, right?
Yeah, he goes, well, that just gives you arguments of why you have a right, but, you know, he was like saying, like, basically, it sounds like they're going to fight it all the way.
They're going to try to claim that you don't have the right to have an audio recording of your case because it's an infraction, that is to say, a minor offense.
Whatever offense I've been charged with, it's just as much a felony to me, the way they're treating me, than it is an infraction to them. They're putting a mark on my record. I'm 46 years old. I haven't been in trouble for years and years and years. Let me calm down. I've helped this city out with the Rock Man, and we put up art down on by the ocean. You know, I would take pictures, and then we would stand around and talk.
Now, the rock, you're talking about the rock sculptures along Westcliff, the rock balance.
And it brought in tourism from all over the place. I talked to people from everywhere. They come around the world to come and see those things, and then they tell their friends, and they came and saw them. And then for me to put a little bit of rock up, you know, and then they make a big scene. It wasn't the fact of the rock. It wasn't the rock. Perry came by one time and looked at it, and so did five other officers. It was the fact that I sat down and I boldly held a homeless hungry sign when I first started holding my sign in, back when I first started. I'm still holding a hungry homeless sign on the streets. They've attacked me twice for the same thing. I'm getting tired of them hiding behind their faces and coming up with this crap that I obstructed the sidewalk to actually get at me for the homeless hungry sign. It's not fair. I have a right, it's a First Amendment right to hold that sign as an alternative means of communication. I even found sections in there where they have no right to kick me off the bench unless there's no warning. It's a public accommodation. They can't sit there and deny me the right to sit on it. I have the ordinance. I found it in my wallet. I wrote it down at the library. There's an ordinance that says they can't force you to be off the seat so somebody else can sit there.
That's correct.
And I was holding a sign which doesn't say anything to anybody, and they can't do anything to me. And I am disabled. If they don't like it, tough luck. They're not going to change my mind whether I'm disabled. I haven't worked in 12 years.
And you've been, of course...
I should know whether I'm disabled, not the stick in court.
Steve, you've been showing you've been showing your determination here by carefully researching this stuff.
I got stuff I got, and I just realized I have a whole bunch of information.
Finding the statutes. And you actually went to the city attorney's office on Friday, right?
Yeah, I went there after you told me to go down, and you talk to the guy, and then I get down, and I can hear the woman upstairs. They're remodeling down there. But she's talking to him, and then she comes down and... hands me a card and says, oh, make an appointment. Like he didn't even expect me to come in. I mean, what is he doing, researching?
Mm. So
he's
not in for homeless people, apparently. Yeah, that's too bad. Because he did tell me that if you came in to give him a...